Welcome, everyone, to another BYU Sports Nation Deep Blue special. I'm your host, Spencer Linton. The show rolls on from Studio B, and during the next hour, we will showcase a group of powerful, moving, and impactful stories. Over the last few years, BYU TV has explored, discovered, and produced these inspiring and unique narratives, often featuring BYU athletes and coaches. These features are at the heart of our Deep Blue series. Today, we will hear and focus on triumphs of life, beating tragedy and loss with hope, faith, and love. Today, we enter the BYU football locker room for features including BYU defensive back Eddie Heckard, associate head coach Jay Hill, and Super Bowl champion and NFL assistant coach Porter Ellett. Starting things off, Eddie Heckard, who found in the game of football a way out. It gave him a path to escape significant tragedy and quite literally sprint towards a better life. This is Deep Blue.
I had pictures for football that day.
Lil Eddie went to get his hair cut.
We stayed right across the street from like a shopping plaza. I could just walk across the street.
An area in which I begged and pleaded with my brother not to go back to.
I remember my dad, he gave me the money, got my hair cut. Then as I'm coming back home, I seen one of my dad's closest friends like running towards me and his hand was bleeding or whatever. Then he's like, somebody got your dad tied up and they robbing him.
Eddie was born in the North Las Vegas Hospital. At the time, his mom was incarcerated.
My dad was in prison or whatever.
I picked him up from the hospital, but that was already the plan that his parents had put into place. So I got the call.
You know, she did the best she could. Obviously, when my brother came home, Eddie was his first order of business. And, you know, he got him back with him, and it was beautiful to see. He raised him right. He directed him and he guided him right. Regardless as to what else was going on, you know, he made sure he stayed on track.
And he put me in track and I was playing football right away.
I think I met Eddie in like 06. I ran into his father. He knew about the program we were building. Said that he was a really good player. And we brought him out. And from the first day, man, one of the best kids I've ever coached. Right out here, man, he's won like 4 or 5 championships right on this field. And just kept going.
I excelled in football pretty fast. I don't know like how or from what. Like I was always a good tackler. My dad was like pushing me as well, but it was just like more of a reward behind it. Every time I mess up, like I give him $1. Anytime I get it right, he'd give me back money.
It was a father and son bond right there, and it was awesome to see.
Once he committed his life to like staying out of jail and stuff, he did. He's a good dad in my eyes.
But back then we only have probably like 3 fathers. Active. Ed was one, and like I say, he was trying to do right, you know, by his boy, and then trying to bring him up the right way. He was doing the best he can do, and he was doing a great job, you know, and it was just sad to see, you know, it all come to an end like that.
Somebody got your dad tied up and they robbing him.
I think the first officer that arrived, he started bringing out the yellow tape. I was like, whoa. And at the same moment, Eddie come running across the parking lot.
The fire department wasn't able to gain entry into the house because it was an older house. And with that kind of security gate, they couldn't get in. And here's little Eddie walking through the crowd. I didn't even see him. He walked up to the fire people and said, will this help? And he gave them his door key in order to get in the house.
The officer asked me who I was. I told him I was his coach. We had practice. So I just put Eddie in the car. I still didn't know what was going on at the moment. We just took off, you know, to get away from what was going on and kind of have some ideas, you know. That ride to practice, man, you know, looking in the rearview mirror at the kid, he was back there, man, tears, and he was confused. He didn't know what was going on, you know. He was scared, and I was scared for him.
We grew up out of the crack era. We come from the crack era. So basically, it was a situation where he was selling crack. Once Lil Eddie was born, once he got out of jail, he never used crack no more. So, but he was hustling.
You know, he was in his home, let people in that he was acquainted with.
And they jumped him, you know, roughed him up, blunt force trauma. They was gonna try to rob him. My brother wasn't gonna give him it. He wasn't gonna give him whatever they was asking for. You know, he could have probably just gave it to him and been alive, but that's not how we built.
And they killed him. And they tried to burn the house down in order to cover up evidence, but it didn't work. It didn't work.
If I would have just walked straight home, I probably would have walked into it or something. And I think about that sometimes. It's just, it's the way God handles things. And everything happens for a reason, so I feel like that's the reason.
I'm sure he had some mourning days, but we wasn't gonna let him sit in the corner and just, you know, soak in it, you know. We kept loving him, man. Let's keep playing. Let's just, you know, your dad watching you, man. Let's go have this game for your dad today. You know, let's go keep doing it. Let's just keep going.
Uncle Kyle and Marissa was there for him through everything. Like, they was at the graduations, at every game, making a way, just making sure that he was happy as much as they can. So I know they probably couldn't get him everything, but he didn't know that probably. Like, they made a way for him. And still, like, he look up to them.
The chain has been broken. The chain was broken when he got his scholarship. The chain was broken when he entered into college. The chain was broken when he graduated.
The injuries in college, the ascent that he had, you know, being a partial scholarship guy to a full scholarship guy to an All-American, it wasn't easy, and it didn't come easy at any stage. And the greatest compliment I can give him is he's very resilient and he's done things the right way.
Even though you come from like a poverty neighborhood or hood with a lot of violence, like, you can make it out. Like, you don't have to just be stuck in it and do what everybody else doing and going down the wrong path. Like you can make it out. Like, now you got the kids down the street like, oh, I want to be like Eddie. Like, go to college. Go be great. Go let everybody all come together and watch you play.
That's what breaking the chains is to me. Like, just changing that name for ourselves, starting a new generation of another lifestyle.
I believe by faith God has not brought him this far to not fulfill whatever Eddie's heart's desires are and whatever my prayers have been for him. You know, I live like that, and I'm going to keep on pushing it. I'm going to keep on pushing that through my mind, putting it in the universe, and, you know, and instilling whatever I can in him to keep him encouraged.
I know he definitely making his dad proud. I don't even know if he know he making his dad proud, but if we proud of him, his dad for sure proud of him.
Eddie Heckard was resilient, to say the least, in spite of unspeakable tragedy. After breaking the chain and going to college, Eddie is now a source of inspiration to younger kids who very much look up to him. It was BYU defensive coordinator Jay Hill who first offered Eddie Heckard a scholarship to Weber State University. And Hill's career had a few stops before Weber, notably the University of Utah. So he's worn red, then purple, and now BYU blue. Jay Hill's wife, Sarah, has been a constant support by his side no matter the color of the jersey. But after Sarah fell ill a few years ago, a doctor's visit revealed that Coach Hill would now have to prepare for his toughest test yet, something he had no playbook for. Sarah had cancer. This is Deep Blue.
I went to college basically to hopefully earn a scholarship. I played college football just for the experience. I mean, what else are you gonna do? It seemed like a good way to meet girls or something like that.
It was a cold winter night, and my friend had come to visit me, and we were headed to a basketball game, and it was freezing cold. We were walking, and so we stuck out our thumbs, and Jay picked us up hitchhiking.
I always joked with them that when I moved to college, oh, don't worry, I won't meet anyone hitchhiking. I won't get into any stranger's car like you guys did. Who meets their spouse hitchhiking? Like, it's just such a unique, funny story, but it's perfect to them.
Jay Hill and I started coaching in college at the same time. He just had finished playing at the University of Utah. He spent some time with the Buffalo Bills, got released. So he came back to University of Utah.
So Jay coached at the University of Utah for 13 seasons and was a graduate assistant under Coach McBride and Coach Meyer. When Coach Whittingham became the head coach, he hired Jay as a full-time coach, and that was his first full-time position. And we owe a lot to Coach Whittingham for that opportunity.
God puts weird things in your path, and we just really embrace those opportunities. And once you take them, you gotta make the best of them, because you can't now look back and say, oh, I screwed up.
I think one thing I have always really admired about my dad is how much of a spiritual guy he is and how much of a relationship he has with his Heavenly Father. Because in every decision he's made, whether that's in football or just in life in general, he is so conscious to take into account the personal revelation that he receives. And every decision that he's made is completely guided by the Lord.
So Jay saw an opportunity and Weber State was looking for a head coach. It was a significant pay cut. It didn't make sense on paper. A lot of people wondered if he was committing career suicide by going from the FBS level to FCS level. But we could not deny that it was the right next step.
And we took over this team thinking we were gonna be one-year wonders and we were gonna flip it around and we were gonna be great. And when we got into it, there was a lot more to that program than I originally knew and anticipated. There was some academic issues going on. There were some team culture issues going on. I was the fourth head coach in 4 years and they weren't winning, but got behind it and went there, and bottom line, first year was not good. Started 0-9. I was in my office late one night, and Sarah had been talking about for like 6 months that she had had some pain in her pectoral area, and it just wasn't getting better, and they attributed it to a torn pec when she was doing CrossFit. But it wasn't getting better. So anyway, she went for a biopsy just to make sure that nothing was there.
I show up often to his office, but I don't show up late nights during fall camp. And I shut the door behind me and he knew something was wrong.
So we talked for 10 or 15 minutes, and then I remember vividly walking into the staff room because all my coaches were waiting in the room next door because we were going to talk about practice for the following day.
And he said, well, can we move it here? And they're like, no, we got to do this and this. He's like, well, can we move it here? Well, we got to do this and this. And it just wasn't working for him to quietly just move things around and slip out and go to this appointment. So he finally had to say, close the door. And he got very emotional and said, guys, Sarah was diagnosed with cancer. Hodgkin's lymphoma, it was stage 4, and we have doctor's appointments. And it's a tribute to him for creating a staff that can run on their own. And they said, you go, we've got this handled.
Those were difficult times, and you could just see slowly that from treatment to treatment to treatment, it was just starting to take its toll on her physically, on her health. She lost her hair, and she was just an absolute warrior. I will say the football side of things got difficult because I mentioned before we were playing Utah State. We thought we were gonna win. We went up there and played horrible and got cremated our first game. And then the next week we rebound and we're up 21-0 in the first quarter against South Dakota. And then they come roaring back, tie the game right at the end of the game, and we lose in overtime. So now it's, you got, your wife has cancer, you're 0-2, and you're at a real dilemma in life as to how you're gonna handle it. I remember one morning I was in my office super early all by myself, and I came across a thing, it's called The Strangest Secret. I listened to it, and it basically said, you gotta trust God, you gotta come up with a goal that you really wanna obtain, and then you're gonna write down 20 things every day that you're gonna do to reach these goals. I was gonna live my life in a way that God was gonna be happy with the way I was living it so that he could bless my wife because I couldn't heal her cancer. And then the second goal was we were gonna make it to the FCS playoffs.
When you talk about true love, that's what I see in my parents. That was very apparent when my mom was going through cancer. I mean, from my dad going to her chemo treatments to him going and visiting her during her bone marrow transplant, to my mom coming to every single one of his games and to being there in the stands cheering him on.
And that's what's so beautiful about a marriage is you can go through the same thing in the same house with the same people around you, but have two completely different experiences. And it was beautiful to watch him grow through what we were going through.
It's just the clarity that kicked in and the things that started to occur. We win our next 3 games, and we're on a path to really playing good And by the end of the season, we make it to the FCS playoffs, and Sarah gets through her treatments, and it was one of those tender mercies you see in life again.
You'd like to not have any resistance or adversity along the way, but when that happens, you want to circle the wagons, and it was cool to see him be able to do that by example.
It was something that taught me a lesson that no matter what goes on in your life, you can have that work-family balance. He loves his family, they are his number one priority, and he just happens to be a heck of a football coach as well.
I feel so grateful every day that I get to not only learn from his example, but my mom's too, because they truly are the perfect pair and the best parents that anyone could ask for.
After Coach Hill came to the conclusion that he alone could not heal his wife's cancer, he turned to a source where he had received help his entire life, his Heavenly Father. Call it a miracle or not, we're just so thrilled Sarah is healthy and well and still by Coach's side. When we return on this Deep Blue special, BYU running back Hinkley Ropati tells us how overcoming doubt, grudges, and loss helped mentally prepare him for something he never thought would happen. You're watching Deep Blue on BYU TV. Our BYU football Deep Blue special continues from Studio B. I'm Spencer Linton. Wherever and however you're joining, great to have you with us. After missing the entirety of the 2020 season due to an injury, and then seeing limited reps in 2021, BYU running back Hinkley Ropati became a big factor for the Cougar offense late in 2022. Ropati carried that momentum into fall camp for a 2023 season with high hopes, only to have those dreams dashed by another devastating injury. Ropati is relying on experience of overcoming several obstacles, which he says gives him a unique perspective and faith that he'll come back stronger. This is Deep Blue.
Hinkley got into football when he was 5 years old.
It didn't stick with any of my other siblings.
Plain and simple, it was Hinkley's thing.
My head coach, he texted me, he told me, hey, I got somebody's here to see you. There he was one of the coaches from BYU. And I was like super excited because BYU, like one of the schools that I hope to go play for. And I came back afterwards and talked to my coach. So like, so how'd he go?
I could just tell like something was weighing heavy on his mind. And I was like, what happened? He was like, they said I'm too short. And I was just like, dang.
I started to grow this feeling of animosity towards them. Just like, man, you know what? I'm gonna prove them wrong. And that's kind of was like a part of like the chip on my shoulder for like the rest of my senior year.
So he went on his mission, and when he came back, he got a little thicker in his like body mass. I was like, man, I'm kind of looking up to you now. Like you're a little taller too.
The mission did a lot of great things for me. I've grown spiritually, you know, and mentally, emotionally, in so many ways, but I also grew physically.
Before you left, if you go serve the Lord, all your heart and mind and soul, the Lord will bless you with everything. So if you really feel, go back to football, I already told you what blessing is there.
When I came home from my mission, I went to Cerritos Junior College, and that's where I played my freshman year of football.
We had to learn him, and we had to find out his triggers to actually not have him overwork because he's a workaholic. He put everything he could into it.
So when he was lifting with Cerritos, like preseason, BYU came and they kind of like saw him. They were like, oh wow, who's this kid? Like,
so I asked the coach who he was, and when the coach said his name, I was like, that's no way that's that guy. I just remembered this skinny little high school guy. Now he was playing running back and he looked like a running back.
At the end of the season, we have exit meetings with our players. And I told him, I said, you know, I'm really excited that you may be coming back, but I said, I know if somebody comes in and wants you, that we're not going to stop you from going.
After my freshman year, I was at the highest point of my life. I'm starting to see my dreams come to reality. I'm starting to see that I really am going to go play Division I football. If I'm being honest, BYU was like the last school on my mind. Like I said, the animosity I had towards them in the beginning. And so I wasn't really thinking about them. I was hoping to stay closer to home, and that's kind of what was the plan.
It was all so sudden, really. Nobody had any idea, you know, not even a clue. My mom was the type, when it came to her health, she was very quiet about it.
When I came home from work, she was planning to make the barbecue for his son's birthday on that day.
And I just remember getting a phone call from my dad. And while they were at my aunt's place, I guess my mom, she passed out.
First thing I did is I give you blessings, you know. So I pray to our Heavenly Father to please to give your life back.
Like at this point, you're not thinking anything. You're just like, okay, you know, we're gonna pull up and we're gonna see what's going on. And as I pull up to the hospital with my younger brother, I just remember, you know, seeing my older brother and my dad just sitting outside. This is during COVID.
And the doctor comes out and he tells us that my mom had passed away. They were able to bring her back for like a couple minutes and then she went back out.
I just remember everything just kind of going blurry. And I remember just thinking like, man, what's going on? What do you mean you can't bring her back? Like, what do you mean? Like, I just felt like my world at that moment just like completely turned upside down.
We just told each other, hey, like, you know, no matter what happens, you know, we all got each other. We all remember what mom instilled in us. We can all be a part of that backbone now. It's our time to step up. And we started driving home.
I just remember walking out of the car and going into the house, and I feel like that was the hardest part of everything, was just telling the girls, telling my younger sisters that their mom wasn't coming back home. You know, and I feel like after those words came out of our mouth, that mom wasn't coming back home, I don't know, I just felt like it was just another dagger to the heart, you know.
Our mom is gone. Like, there's no answers to be given at the moment. There's no clarity with the situation. It's just like, she's gone.
Now, whenever we go through anything, we go with it, with everything we have, because there's nothing that we're gonna go through that was as hard as that moment.
2 weeks after my mom passed, BYU actually reached out and started to recruit me a lot harder than they were before. And then obviously with like the recent passing of my mom at that time, it was just kind of like,
the last dream that they shared together was that dream of BYU. He was just like, I have to, like, I just have to do it. Like, there's no other choice but that one that I know my mom would have, like, wanted for me.
It was my outlet on a lot of things that I was dealing with at the time in my life. Just being able to just play football and be out there with the boys was, for me, the biggest way to cope with a lot of things that was going on in my life.
A lot of people can rally around and show empathy. It's another thing when someone takes a loss that they've experienced, but then also serves others. Coming up to me and asking me how am I doing? And I'm like, man, I'm doing good, but like, seriously.
I'm still new to the system and I was just learning the playbook, getting closer to, you know, my teammates. And then all of a sudden,
he tore his ACL in like the first or second practice.
The very next day, he gets in his pads and comes jogging out to practice like nothing happened. He came out and was trying to do the drills and everything, was trying to cut, and you could just tell, like, he wanted to play so bad.
I tell him, like, man, don't worry. Like, you may be down now, but you're going to be up again. And you're gonna work your way back up, and you're going to grind hard, you're going to get to it like you always do.
Got beaten down, could have quit 15 times, has not done it, came back last year, kept a great attitude, did whatever he was asked to do, never got down on anybody, didn't get down on himself, and then had a great second half of the year. And the games we won in the second half wouldn't have happened, in my opinion, without him.
You know, there are plenty of times in my life where I felt like, man, what can go wrong, you know, or could it be any worse? And it really could. I just look at my life and the journey that I've been through to get to where I am today, and all I can feel is just gratitude. Most importantly, to Heavenly Father for those blessings, and just to have a loving family back home, always supporting me and loving me no matter what. I'm truly blessed to be where I am, to be here at BYU, playing the sport that I love, marry the girl of my dreams. I feel like there's not much I can ask for.
Hinkler Apati is carrying on the dream he shared with his mom before she passed away, to play at BYU, and as of the beginning of this 2024 season, Hinkley is healthy and ready to leave his mark on the field. When we come back, frustration led BYU wide receiver Cody Epps to the transfer portal, but we'll hear why the desire to leave a legacy in Provo brought him back. And then former BYU student Porter Ellett shares how he went from a small town to Super Bowl championships. You're watching Deep Blue on BYU TV. Welcome back to our BYU Football Deep Blue Special. I'm your host, Spencer Linton. Thus far, we've seen stories of inspiration, faith, and resilience from Eddie Heckard, Jay Hill, and Hinkley Ropati. Next up, BYU wide receiver Cody Epps, who entered the transfer portal during the 2023 offseason, shocking many. And while frustration may have taken him to the perceived greener pasture in the portal, the desire to build and ultimately leave a legacy here in Provo brought him back. This is Deep Blue.
There was a lot of frustrations that I had with myself, with coaches, with family members, with a lot of things around me that were just building up and creating a big avalanche of frustration.
I could have done a better job at just not assuming that all is well in Cody's situation.
You know, when he called, it's a difficult situation where he explained why he wanted to go into the portal, and wasn't that I agreed or not, it was just, this is his life. I need to show him that I cared about him and whatever he wants to do.
After I hit the portal, I was pretty frustrated just because it's the unknown.
You don't know until you do it. You can't speak to any colleges until you put yourself in the portal.
It was a major shock, to say the least. It was a good reminder for me in this era of college football, transfer portal, NIL, that the most important recruiting job you have is to recruit your own room.
Cody started at a very young age. I have to give that to his father.
I don't even think he was two yet. And I was just messing around, like tossing him the ball. And he literally like caught it like you're supposed to catch a football.
So I was in drills, like intense drills, like doing ladders, cone drills, at about 5, 6 years old, learning about coverages and the details of football at a very young age, which kind of made it a little bit hard for me just because I was so, my focus was so centralized on football. I just felt that at times I didn't get to live every other kid's dreams, which is chasing butterflies in the outfield of a baseball field, so.
There was a point where I think he was just overwhelmed.
Going into my senior season, I didn't want to play football anymore. Just because I felt like I wanted to start, you know, doing things that I would see on movies and from my peers around me.
He kind of laid into me a little bit like that, you know. I wanted to go to the museum every once in a while and go to the beach or just have a conversation with my father about something other than football. And it kind of hit me like a ton of bricks, like, whoa, I kind of robbed my son of a childhood. It was a realization that I made some mistakes.
In those conversations, I think we just had to reimagine, revisit the desire, be reminded of why he loves the game.
It was a pivotal moment in my life because my village around me kind of made it very clear that when God gives you a gift, you don't tell God when that gift is done. You stay on that path until God says, okay, you've hit the ending road for this specific task. Now let's move on to the next thing.
About a day or so, I don't know what happened. You know, that's between him and God, but he changed his mind and the rest is history.
He's a guy who was a very, very productive high school player at one of the biggest high school programs in the country.
The things that he's able to do, I mean, he led the country in reception yards, touchdowns, all that stuff. He had all the stats to back it up.
In my senior year, when I started doing a lot of spectacular things with the ball in my hand and making big plays, my recruitment was really slow.
It's different for every kid, you know what I mean? It's no cookie cutter version of recruiting. We don't worry about things that we don't have control over. As long as he took care of business in the classroom and took care of business on the field, then all that other stuff would take care of itself. Whoever it might be, it only takes one.
And then it kind of picked up at the end, but when it picked up, it was BYU. When BYU came calling, it was like, this is the place that I want to be.
We felt really fortunate to get him here in the first place. And from day one, right away as a true freshman, he was in the mix to get playing time.
Unfortunately, he faced some injury. I think that was a huge blow for him to deal with, where it was just like really knocked him down to his knees. And
he was hurt for almost 2 years and had to battle through some surgeries and a lot of frustration.
I went to rehab a day after I hit the portal. And I was talking to this guy and he said something super pivotal. If a man builds something, why not share it? And instantly in that moment, I thought, this has been a culmination of me, you know, just building with my coaches, building with my teammates, building with the university, the fan base, the culture. Why wouldn't I want to stay here and share that with other people that are going to come along this journey?
We talked about why Cody chose BYU. He didn't choose it because it was big. He chose it for other reasons. And he's still that same person.
If I just go away, that's just another guy that transferred out of here and left. That's not a hero, a warrior for the people that I built a connection with here. So I feel like, why would I not share that? I told you I want to make a change. I want to be somebody that's 5,000 years from now, they still remember Cody Epps from BYU. That's why I didn't leave BYU. That's why I stayed here.
I think it was a spur of the moment decision. I don't think he regrets it, because we don't do that. I think that he learned from it, and I think he appreciates the lessons that he learned from.
I don't want him to carry the weight of the world on his shoulders, that people might view him a little bit differently because of a personal decision that he made.
You know, going through the adversity that he's been through, I'd like to see him collect on the sacrifices that he's made. And this is just me wanting more for him.
I just want him to feel and know that the people who really love him and support him just want to see him at his best self and the best version of himself. And so I want him to bring the energy like he has, have a wonderful smile on his face that he always brings, play with the passion that he plays with, because we're a much better team when Cody is his best self.
Coming back, finding my rhythm, I want to make everything about everybody else. How could I be pivotal to everybody else's career, to everybody else's football focus? I still have a lot of goals for my personal self, but how can I be there for everybody else? Because, you know, you have a frustrated and you know, I could say like a weak moment, and come back resilient and strong and just prove to everybody that I'm here and there's nowhere else that I would rather be.
Upon returning to BYU in the fall of 2023, Epps played in 8 games for the Cougars, tallying a total of 21 catches for just over 260 yards, setting himself up for what many hope will be a true breakout year in 2024. And hey, speaking of breakouts, the Kansas City Chiefs have broken into a full-on dynasty. Porter Ellett, Andy Reid's left-hand man and one of Reid's assistant coaches, has a passion for sports. He followed that passion in spite of losing his arm in a childhood accident. Through Porter's perseverance and support from family and friends like Andy Reid, he's now a Super Bowl champion. This is Deep Blue.
Typically, when someone wants to coach at the NFL level, they have played at a high level, either collegiately or professionally, or they have some sort of network and connection, whether by relation or having worked with them previously.
Porter never played football. We never played football against Porter, and now he's a football coach. Just, it makes sense.
Life in Iowa, it doesn't change a lot. It's an excellent place to raise our family.
We have 6 children, 5 girls, and Porter, the picked on boy.
My dad, growing up, we had 800 sheep, so I always kind of joke around about we had 2 sheep for every person in the hometown, so we could take care of each other if we needed to as far as food.
People are so genuine. When they tell you what they'll do, that's what they do. A handshake is still good in Iowa.
Our home is always like a very safe place. My parents made that a point. We want you to feel like this is where you belong. And that was really like a powerful thing growing up.
Every summer, you take your herd out onto federal grazing land because it's cheaper to feed animals that way.
So we would go out and check them periodically. And just after I turned 4 years old, we went out to check them.
The kids were all in the back of the pickup, and there was a motorcycle in the back of the pickup.
Porter was sitting on the dirt bike, pretending to ride it as the truck is traveling, and it hit a bump, and Porter flew off that dirt bike.
I hit my head so hard on this kind of right side of my head, hit it so hard that it scalped me, fractured my skull. And then the worst damage that we couldn't see at the time was it had actually severed my nerves from my spine. that controlled my right arm.
A man came in the post office that day, and my car was actually in the shop, so I didn't have a car. And I told him, he could tell I was upset. He was a neighbor man there. He said, "What's wrong?" And I said, "My son just got hurt, and I don't even have a car to go follow the ambulance to Richfield." And, sorry. He held out his hand. He had the keys for his car in his hand, and he dropped them in my empty hand. He said, "You can take my car." That's the kind of people we have in Wayne County.
And so they tried a few different things. They went to some world-renowned nerve surgeon in Texas and pulled nerves from the back of his leg and put it into his neck to try and regraft the nerves. And it restored some more feeling, but it never restored the ability to move it. So it just atrophied. It essentially was a 4-year-old arm on a 16-year-old boy when he eventually decided to get it amputated.
When he started to develop and got involved in sports and those kinds of things, it was very discouraging. He told me a story of laying in bed one evening and just thinking, why did this happen to me? And why do I have to deal with this? And if it wasn't for the support of his friends, I don't think he would have gotten through that.
I like to think that we didn't treat him differently, and I don't feel like in our friend group we ever did. He was always just the same as all of us. I'm sure he got comments from people outside, but certainly didn't seem different from the rest of us.
Porter was never different. You know, he may have only had one arm, but he was never different. And so, I mean, he was just another friend.
He wasn't just a member of the team. He was expected to perform at his best and to help him. And that was a very good thing, so.
Like, we never even referred to it as a disability, honestly. We were just like, Porter has this thing that's harder, but he can overcome it. I just like believed in him, you know? Like, he's my little brother, but I was just like, why can't you do stuff? Like, and a lot of times I'd also try to do stuff with one arm before I'd be like, you can do it, just to see what it would be like. And then I would go to him and make it a competition, but.
That kind of rivalry, that kind of competition really prepared me for like everything that I would face, you know, growing up or outside of our home. Like, sometimes you're the one that makes them cry, and sometimes you're the one crying. So Monique did a good job of really, you know, taking care of that part of my life. Like, hey, like, we're gonna compete. We're gonna go at it every day.
They'd go to battle for each other. You better not hurt one or the other because you'll be in trouble. And that's just the way they've grown up, and that's the way they still are.
We met at BYU, we became best friends first, which I think is pretty special. And then we fell in love and decided we were gonna get married. And Heather, Carly's mother, she sat down with us, and one of the very first things that she said to us was, you need to want the other one to succeed.
She asked me, do you want Porter to provide a good living for you and your family? And I said, yeah, of course. And she said, do you want Porter to serve faithfully in the church and honor his priesthood? Again, yes, of course. Do you want him to have an impact on the community in which you live in and any surrounding communities that he could have an influence on? And I said, yes, duh, you know? And she then looked at me and said, then he can't be at home with you all the time. So you're going to have to be independent.
Carly and I, we both played team sports. You know, we both love team sports and we understand being a teammate. So I think that was important as well. Like, we understand what it takes to be a supportive teammate to each other. So I graduated and I headed down the path of, okay, I'll work in finance, I'll do what I need to do to get, you know, what I need done to help my family.
He had been working at Goldman Sachs for maybe 6 months at that point. And I remember him coming home one day from work and he just looked beat, and that kind of pep in his step that he always has just seemed to be missing. And I knew it had to be related to what he was doing all day. It wasn't sparking any sort of joy or fulfillment for him.
And she just asked me the question, you know,
do you love what you do?
Thought about it and I was like, well, yeah, sure.
And so I was like, so when you have nothing else to think about in the world, what is it that you think about? And he said, well, it's sports. And I said, okay, well, let's figure out a way to get you into it.
And so they decided that he should get a master's degree in sports management to help with that dream.
Finally told, you know, Goldman Sachs I was leaving. And the first thing that they said, like, oh, great, you're going to go get an MBA. And I was like, ah, no, I'm not getting an MBA. They kind of all were like, oh, interesting. And then, like, that was the first time where I was like, ah, maybe I don't know if this is the right thing. And then you start to hear it from a lot of other people, too. You know, like, you sure you want to leave Goldman Sachs? Like, that's one of the best companies in the world. It was like, ah, yeah, maybe we shouldn't, you know, maybe we should stay here. But we trusted each other, and we trusted that our decision was going to work out best for us.
I moved him down there. We drove out to Texas in one of our cars and brought, you know, a U-Haul, and I moved him in, got him into our apartment, and then I went back and lived with my grandparents for several more months. I had a really great job working for a marketing company, and so I knew if I just had a few more months and I met my numbers bonus-wise, I would have enough for those 2 years at Baylor to pay for all of his schooling out of pocket. So I'm fumbling with how to break it to the company that I was moving on, and at the same time, they had hired this career development professional to come in, and so I went and sat down with her the next day, and we were going over that plan, and she's like, it doesn't seem like you have any short-term goals that you want to accomplish here at the company. And I'm like, well, you know, truth be told, my husband and I are pursuing something a little bit different, and so I'm not going to be here for much longer. And so she, you know, being nice and inquisitive, asked, well, what is it that you guys are pursuing? And I said, well, my husband really wants to coach football, and we don't quite have the network yet. And she's like, well, you know, again, you got to have a substantial network, and you know, all these things have to fall into place for you, and I just don't know that that would happen. And I looked at her and I said, well, go ahead and look him up in 10 years and see where he's at. And I left the meeting. I was pretty hot after that one. And I kicked myself later on, a few years down the road, because I actually ended up selling Porter short. I told her to look him up in 10 years, and she could have looked him up in 5. And not only was he coaching professionally in the NFL, but he had a Super Bowl ring already, so some career professional development person she was.
I said to him when he was feeling a little bit of success, I said, I want you to promise me one thing. He says, what's that, Dad? And I said, don't forget where you're from. He looked me right in the eye and he said, I never will.
Through being postmaster, they'll come in the post office, they'll have all their chief's gear on, and they'll say, look at me, look at my new chief's gear. And they'll ask me about the games, and when's the game? I thought, we need to have a party for these people. We need to celebrate with the people in the community.
Winning the Super Bowl is like really fun, but it's then going and celebrating with the people who got you there, that is the best part of it all. It's just almost a surreal experience to have all these like people in your life who love you, who then celebrate, you know, your biggest wins in life. And I think we're really fortunate, because I don't know that everybody has that, but we are really fortunate that we have that kind of support system here and, you know, all across the country, really, so.
I just think it's special to be a part of that, and like to be have people around you that don't think you're ever lost. You know, like they let me play catcher with one arm. You know, like what the heck are we doing? You know, like they had to deal with people saying like, why are you having him play catcher? Now all these people that questioned him or said like, why are you spending all that time with that kid? He's not gonna be like worth it. Now they can like look back and be like, it was worth it, you know, like I took the time and I put in the effort and it worked. So, and I hope that like other people see that, you know, like spend time with the kid that's like struggling, you know, like you don't know what they can become, but they'll probably surprise you.
Just amazing, from that thriving metropolis of Loa to Kansas City. Now, a few Super Bowls later, Ellett has quickly become a trusted, reliable mind in the National Football League. Porter Ellett's story remains an inspiration to all of us. As we wrap up, a reminder to watch more inspiring stories like the ones you just watched and heard by visiting byutv.org/deepblue, or you can very simply scan the barcode on the screen. Another thanks to the several members of the BYU football family for sharing their stories, and thank you for joining us on another Deep Blue adventure. For every member of our outstanding crew here at BYU TV, I'm Spencer Linton. We'll see you next time.